welcome to another episode of Untold Mysteries Out of Quarantine on bbsradio.com. Now I have a special guest today that you can call live in if you want to talk live. You can call in. The phone numbers will be soon released. We talk about Dr. Nick Baggage. He's well known into the research in mind control, HARP, and even been in the European Parliament. He's an author, activist, lecturer, and he has also released new DVDs that we also soon have a discussion about that one. Angel, Don't Play With This HARP, H-A-A-R-P, Advances in Tesla Technology. But most important is he's also in Earth Rising Part 1 and Part 2, and has been on many television shows worldwide and also on radio shows, but most of all, if you go to his webpage called earthpulse.com, you can see all about him, earthpulse.com. And welcome to the show, Dr. Nick Baggage, again on Untold Mysteries.
Hey, it's good to be with you again, John. We had a great program here just a few weeks ago, so I'm glad to be with you on BBS Radio.
Yeah, bbsradio.com is the first time that I do with you an interview with them, because I think it's important. We talked many different topics, and you are open-minded to discuss very highly controversial issues, but you do it very grounded, and you can back it up with proof, and that's what I like about you.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. That's been our hallmark over the years, has been documenting our work with really hard paper, you know, not just word-of-mouth conversations, but real documents that give some dimension to the issues that we're discussing.
Yes. Can you tell me in brief, what is your background? Most people will know, but for those who don't know, what your background is and why do you do what you do?
Sure. I currently work as executive director of the Lay Institute on Technologies, Inc., which is a Texas-based nonprofit, and also as a publisher, activist publisher with Earth Pulse Press Incorporated here in Alaska. I come from a political background. Family's been involved at the local, state, and national levels. And that's been a big part of our background in terms of taking science issues forward. I have a doctorate in traditional and complementary medicines. I also worked as in public education for a number of years and was past president of the Alaska Federation of Teachers and the Anchorage Council of Education. The last 13 years, my work's been spent primarily educating the public on the impacts of technologies and the directions in which technologies are headed, and the impacts on really the freedom and liberty of people seems to be the reoccurring theme in so much of the technologies we report on these days.
Yes, you also have your own radio show as well. Can you tell me about that one?
We have a couple of different things in terms of a public outreach. We have our websites, of course, earthpulse.com, and the nonprofit site, layinstitute.org, layinstitute.org. And then I also do a weekly radio program through gcnlive.com, and I'm featured on many, many radio programs around the world and around the country. We work with about 250 radio and TV producers in helping develop material for the public, really, again, as an outreach for education on the impacts of technology. And, of course, we collate a huge amount of material. I've written alone and with co-authors now six books, five of which are still in, or four of which are still in print. And those are actually The Earth Rising, Earth Rising 2, Angels Don't Play This HARP, and Controlling the Human Mind, the latest book. Many of these are in foreign countries as well. We have books in French, German, Japanese, Hungarian, soon in Russian and Bulgarian as well. And again, that's been over a long period of time, getting the information out and being able to present it both to lay organizations as well as political and industrial organizations.
Yes. I just recently had two days ago, I heard that in the Netherlands, they're going to scan your brain before you're going to be, that you can work for a company. What do you think about that one? Really crazy.
Well, there's
here.
Actually quite a bit in this area. You know, the idea of looking at the brain and determining predispositions of individuals is something that actually has been discussed since 9/11. There was a publication called Signal Intelligence. It's not widely circulated. It's mainly a trade magazine. But in that, they had suggested years ago that we develop a technology where you would walk through like a metal detector type apparatus. It would look like the same kind of apparatus, but instead of looking for metal, it would be looking at the brain's various emotional states in order to make a determination whether someone was extraordinarily nervous or perhaps even hiding something. This type of technology is an area that is advancing very rapidly, and expectations in this area in terms of impact on freedom are pretty substantial. I mean, you think about looking literally into the emotional state of an individual or directly in to the mind. That is a big issue and one that has occupied a lot of our time the last couple of years as we look at sort of the advances of technologies in this direction.
I also heard that if you are a compulsive liar, you actually damage your brain and that you can actually see it on a brain scan, that there's a physical effect upon if you're not telling the truth. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, the idea of deception being able to be analyzed in the brain, this is like the next generation of lie detectors, really. The problem is, and this is where it gets a little bit cloudy, is people put a lot of stock in these technologies, and yet, you know, we're still at a really early stage of developing sort of where we go with the technology. The questions that start to get raised is because you think something doesn't necessarily mean you're going to do something. And the question becomes is, at what point do predispositions become a crime? I mean, I don't think they should be. I think that the actions that you take or the actions clearly you're about to take that can be demonstrated by past actions or a combination of actions is an appropriate way to approach things. Everyone has deviant thoughts at one point or another in their life. It's the idea of sort of wrestling that out in your own mind as you make determinations on what you're actually going to do. And I don't think that the thought police are needed now any more than they were needed in the fiction novel 1984. So
Have you seen the movie Minority Report and Fortress? They also talk about brain scanning and so forth.
Yeah, actually, you know, it was interesting. One of those actually replayed recently here in the U.S., a Minority Report in the last few days even. You know, as you think about these kinds of ideas, you know, they embed them in science fiction, but most of science fiction is based upon a certain body of evidence and fact. In the area of the brain and neurosciences, the book Controlling the Human Brain that we wrote, which actually deals with this, this whole variety of technologies, over 300 sources were cited in that text, which really lay the foundation for how this technology has developed and where it is today. And these ideas that were once relegated strictly to science fiction are now evidencing themselves as perhaps more fact than fiction in the 21st century.
You have maybe also seen a movie called Brainstorm Project with Natalie Wood. It was the last movie, by the way.
I haven't seen that
one. Oh, my God, you have to see that one. Brainstorm Project. It's a beautiful story about research in the brain and what happened if you die, and then you have that you actually can record emotions and sensations and the five senses, and that you can, all the emotions attached to that can be recorded and can be played back on another machine, and that someone else can pick it up again.
Well,
it's a beautiful concept. You have to see that movie.
Yeah, it's not so far out. Actually, there's an article that was published in June 2004 in a publication by the Air Force called Technology Horizons, and they had an article by the Electromagnetic Director to the United States called Controlled Effects, where they anticipate being able to artificially be able to synthesize all of the basic human senses from touch, taste, smell, sight, and sound to create complete, synthetic memory, if you will, complete experiences that would be very difficult, if not impossible, to sort out from actual experience that an individual has. And the fact that this, I mean, think about that in the context of, say, court cases and eyewitness testimony, say in 10 or 20 years from now, where we can create these artificial memories, then what becomes real? What? How are we going to distinguish the real from the fiction? The other issue is transferring from one individual to another specific activity within the brain. And there's been a couple of things that kind of go back in this direction. You can go back to some early work by Elizabeth Rauscher and her late husband, Bill Bice, where they demonstrated in the mid-'80s a version of what would be referred to as electronic telepathy, the idea of transferring a thought from one individual to another using an electronic medium to do that. That was demonstrated in 1985 successfully. That's over now 22 years ago. The same idea is being advanced again today by more sophisticated modeling, where they actually take and map the brain activity of a human being, an individual, that has, say, anomalous or some unusual capability, and then take and transfer that by being able to create an electromagnetic signal that would replicate that in another individual. In other words, to just transfer that same stimulation of the same areas of the brain and see if, in fact, they could create the same effect. And that research is actually ongoing within both military and private circles today.
Now, to influence another person's behavior, behavior modification, that's the keyword, but you can look in the Uncle Sam section of Google.com and then Uncle Sam, you can actually look up and you see declassified documents talking about behavior modification. If you look in mind control, you will not find that much, but when you look in the section of behavior modification, you will see so much evidence of almost beyond belief of that they are extremely interesting in to modify behavior of the people. What is your goal on this? How far do you think the government is going with this?
Well, I you know, from their own materials, there is actually an RFP, a request for proposal, that's currently open. It's by the Air Force, and it's been open for some months. In fact, it doesn't even close. This is a request for proposals from the private sector for government use in developing new technologies. The contract broad agency announcement number is BAA05-05HE, and it's from the research Air Force Research Laboratory. It expires in 2009, September 30th, 2009, it's an open request. And one of the, I'll just read a one-liner out of it, which kind of gets to the heart of it. It says, "The ultimate goal of such research is to develop a fully articulated theory with supporting predictive models that will facilitate the inducement of desired behavioral effects in individuals and groups through the use of non-lethal weapons," unquote. Essentially, this, when you look at the whole announcement, it is directed at developing technologies that would allow, at a distance, to override the normal mechanisms of mind and body so that you could take control of individuals remotely, modify behavior, modify thought processes, not in some gross, obvious way, but perhaps in a subtle way where the individuals being affected would have absolutely no knowledge of the effect. In fact, even in recent days, there was a release of the family jewels of the CIA, a 700-plus page document. In fact, I think the New York Times even has it posted on their website. It gets into some of the old material dealing with the MK-Ultra, some of the earlier experiments and projects of the United States Central Intelligence Agency. These projects in behavior modification continue to this day, as just referenced in the latest Air Force document that's not even expired yet. At earthpulse.com, I actually have posted under the sidebar mind control a number of documents, including the Navy's latest from November 6, 2006, their rules for human experimentation, which includes on page 9 a clear discussion of who approves, and in their words, mind control experiments. You know, that's pretty bold and pretty blatant. And shows up in their own discussion of what it requires to run this kind of experiment on individuals.
Now, I was also fascinated with the concept that the true real UFOs who are reported worldwide can actually respond to your thoughts. Now, that in itself, it sounds far-fetched from how is that possible, but imagine yourself that there is in the future already they have, that the mind and the machine can be connected to each other somehow. Tomorrow I got to interview Jim Sparks in the second part, and he's very detailed about his abduction experience, and he talks about that the connection with machine and man will be extremely connected and also without the need of physical input. It's even you can almost say you can have telepathy with machines. Now, when you do some research in before Stephen Greer became famous in his disclosure project, he was talking about the SETI initiative of the CE5 protocols. He talks about that humans can have a certain protocol to have your own induce or force an own experience with UFOs and go to certain locations and have a group thought coherent projection. And they claim that you can use many ways to invoke an experience. And they did that with success many times. And I've seen the footages. It is really mind-blowing what I saw. And I used that material in my lectures. But it is important to see this statement. They said that if you have a UFO encounter and you have a group thought coherent projection, you can actually have an impact on the UFO. And UFO not necessarily has to be doing it for you. Let's say that it's a huge triangle craft that you see in the distance, and you ask them to come over and fly over so that we can look it better, you know. And if you have a group thought projection, actually it will respond to that request, and not necessarily that the alien's doing it, but that the machine is doing it, because the machine is responding to that kind of power. Have you ever considered that angle, that you have this group thought coherent projection connected to a machine?
Well, you know, in terms of the UFO phenomena, it's not something that I've spent a lot of time researching. There's many experts in the area, but the idea of using mind to impact machinery is actually a big part of research ongoing. You know, being able to monitor the mind of, say, aircraft pilots, a military aircraft, be able to monitor them and control flight by brain activity alone is something that is both being looked at by the Israeli Air Force and our own, among others. The idea of being able to control the other way, being able to control the thoughts, Sony developed some technologies recently that can be used in gaming that actually will compel a person, will actually affect the movement of an individual physically when they're hooked up to such an apparatus. So, you know, that's not so far-fetched, I mean, in terms of the technology being available to do this. The idea of perhaps there being some other form of communication that humans engage in that isn't verbal, that's not body language, but really is an energetic exchange or what would be considered a telepathic exchange is not far-fetched either. In fact, back as far as the early 70s, a huge amount of research was done in the former Eastern Bloc countries. The reports that were looked at and developed by the United States Defense Intelligence Agency that analyzed these very things we're talking about, we've posted them on our website, again under the mind control button, where you can actually look at hundreds of pages of the paranormal, or what now is referred to as anomalous human capabilities. That's how the military deals with that whole ESP phenomena. But the interesting part of all that is that they took it very seriously. The research indicated what was possible, and as time has shown, many of these things have borne fruit in terms of their explanation. There's actually a physicist, Alexander K. Varane, and he used to run the biophysics lab for the USSR Academy of Sciences. He's now an independent scientist, but he has posted on the web a number of ideas about telekinesis, telepathy, these unusual mental capabilities, and given some mathematical formula that might explain the model under which these things operate. And Alex is in his early 60s now. He actually began his science career with an interest in the paranormal, having watched a demonstration in the former Soviet Union as a young child, became intrigued. He has an IQ that probably kicks over 200 and is a brilliant, brilliant guy, but he spent his life in the biophysics field with this as sort of his underlying motivation. And I was with him in Dallas a few months ago. We had a chance to talk about all of this, And we're at a threshold. Wow. I really believe we are at a threshold where human consciousness, through augmentation of both equipment and stimulating the portions of the brain that lie dormant, I think all of these capabilities will manifest in our lifetimes. We're going to see it on a much larger scale. It's going to create some real interesting challenges. Consider the transparency of both the public and public officials, and it becomes a pretty startling direction of science. And it's being taken very seriously by very serious people all around the world.
It's like a two-sided sword that is very sharp. The other side is, of course, that the Navy, that, as you explained last time, it actually found out that they can do a lot of positive things with this technology, but the other hand is that they are afraid of the power of the people, that the people are waking up and that they can use this power for their good, and that they actually afraid to lose ground or lose the control over the people if people find out what they can do with activating their potential.
Absolutely. I think this, when I looked into, and we researched it pretty thoroughly, I mean, there's hundreds of citations. As we built the book, Controlling the Human Mind, and put that together, the thing that kept coming back to us is, what was it really about? Was it about manipulating and controlling people? And certainly, that was a part of it. But in the course of doing the research, they discovered that they could also unleash these incredible potentials. And I think it scared the heck out of them. I think when they realized that individuals, virtually everyone on the planet, had this capability latent within our consciousness, whatever that really represents, whether it's a physical brain or something else, but the point is, when they discovered that, I think that really alerted them to the fact that they would become highly transparent. In other words, all the things that governments and others would like to hide from us as a public would all of a sudden be revealed. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, each of us certainly has our own histories, our own learning experiences, some of which we might consider bad, actually, in our histories, but it's how we learn. It's what we do. Could you imagine a totally transparent society where people knew the thoughts of others? It would be almost like judgment.
Then there's no need for war because of you knowing that if you, let's say that I want to attack you, but you are an evidence transparent, then you can actually take precautions because of it. So there's no need for wars anymore because everything is transparent.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that it would result immediately in that. I think it would actually result in a lot of chaos as people try and hide the true intentionality of their very being. And I think that's what gets in the way. I had one experience, and I'll mention this on the air because it was one of those experiences that you just never, ever forget. And as a young person, now it's over almost 30 years ago, I had the experience of being with a very good friend who had spontaneously developed a telepathic ability. And it was amazing. I mean, this guy went through a huge trauma that ended up creating a series of events, and I won't go into the details of that, but he gave me a demonstration. He said to me, Nick, you know, think of anything in the world and picture it in your mind. Just hold the picture, hold the image for just a few seconds, and I'll tell you what it is. And I did that, and he quickly responded. As I got the image firmly in my mind, he said, you're thinking about your birth date on a calendar with a winter scene, and then he described everything in that picture in my mind, down to the fine details. And I asked him, I said, you know, I always thought what a great gift that would be. And I asked him about it, and he said it was a curse. And let me tell you why. He actually had the experience, if he got a little bit relaxed, he had a glass of beer or a glass of wine and just kind of relaxed just a little bit, it became highly active. And what he found is when he was amongst people that he thought were his friends, and he could really see their innermost thoughts about him, it became very, very uncomfortable. The next time I saw him was a couple years later, and he was working in a daycare facility with young children. And if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense because their thoughts are pretty innocent, and actually you can redirect them in a good, positive way. But it became a burden more than a gift for him. And I think that's something that really made me think. Now, 30 years ago, as I looked at that, I thought, you know, I can see the validity of that. Wouldn't that be a shock to all of us to fully see And it would cause us to reconcile. I mean, it would cause us to sort of reconcile our own weaknesses and strengths, and it would also cause us to really pray that people were forgiving, because all of us have fallen short, I think, of what we're capable of and made mistakes in our lives. And, you know, there comes a lot of...
Yeah, of course, the key word to all of this is know thyself. Now, I know that is also the motto of the Freemasons, but they were not the inventor of this wisdom. But if people know more about themselves, they can actually forgive themselves and therefore have more understanding that what you see in the other person is you, because it is your story in your head, what you have about that person. So if someone thinks negative about me, I can, you know, I can be offended by it, but I can also think it is his own interpretation of a piece of me. But that is not me. That's just his story about me. You see what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It is. And in fact, I think that's probably the biggest challenge, is to overcome is what life really is, in my view, is that's what we do here. We learn about, you know, we learn through our error, and we grow from that. And unfortunately, most of us grow from the bad experiences more so than we grow from the good ones. But it's the as my friend in Germany, Robert, always says, it's the human factor, you know. And that doesn't mean it's good or bad. It just is. And all of us make mistakes. All of us grow through those mistakes, or most of us do. But the point of the matter is, here we have technologies that may, in fact, stimulate and open these capabilities within human beings. And that therein lies even greater responsibility. The fact that governments have been doing this and have been experimenting in this area, not necessarily for what most of us would consider our best and highest use of these technologies, but in fact, out of the paranoia that grows from government when they spend their lives hiding what the public would otherwise object to. And it's not just in the United States, but I think every country around the world. As I travel around the world, I hear the same nature, the same type of complaints from citizens from other countries when they reflect on their own government. It's not unique to the United States. It just happens to be we make a lot more noise. We violate a lot of rules in terms of how we operate as a government. But that is not a true reflection of the American character, nor a true reflection of the people that live here. The polling in this country is showing a great deal of dissatisfaction in the way that our government acts and portrays our individual interest. And when you think about the mind itself, consciousness itself, isn't that the domain of politics, after all? And that's where it becomes a too tempting target to those in power to manipulate the behavior of others.
Indeed. Something else. I'm working about 17 years now to talk about suppressed inventions in general, not only about Nikola Tesla, but many other suppressed inventions. And I show them footages, I talk about it, and I have also discussions when I give lectures, and I interact with the public. And what I found out, that a part of the public is actually scared of having more liberty, and that there's no need to work, let's say, 40 hours a week, but that you can actually work for 20 hours a week and still have enough money because of the all the suppressed inventions in place. And the argument is that when you have all those suppressed inventions, like free energy and other, a long list, and if you have it, then the reason that you have to go to work will go down, because you actually... You pay the energy bill, you pay gasoline, and if you don't have to do that anymore, you are less slave to the system that is raping the Earth ecosystem. So, and then the discussion is getting fascinating, because a part of the people are actually afraid to get more liberty and more freedom and more spare time, because they don't know what to do with it. And I said, wait a minute, this is ridiculous, but there are people afraid of it.
Absolutely. In fact, it was supposed to be by now. You know, when I look back on... what we were hearing in the early 70s and late 60s is we were supposed to be looking at not a 40-hour work week or a 50-hour work week, or for many people a 60 or 70-hour work week as they do two jobs to make it work. We were supposed to be looking at a 30-hour work week with more time to engage in the things that concern us in terms of not just employment, but getting involved in our communities, getting involved in our neighborhoods, our governments, and being active as citizens. And instead,
yes.
we've been reduced to really a slave class. And I'll tell you who illustrated this for me. I had a friend of mine in the mid-90s come over from the Soviet Union. It was actually Alex K. Varanin. And as we traveled around my community, he marveled at what he considered the wealth. I mean, the houses, the homes, the businesses. And I had to explain to him that most of the homes that he was looking at weren't owned by individuals. They were owned by the bank, most of the money being paid in interest, and very little. In fact, most of the people, if they were out of their house for out of a job for a month, they'd be out of their house the next month. And what he didn't realize is that there was a whole system of mortgage banking. I mean, when he said he owned his home in Russia at that point, he really meant it. He actually did. You know, when you think about it, the bulk of people's income flows in two directions. It flows, actually three. The primary direction, the biggest chunk, ends up in taxes, either directly or through all of the things that we purchase in the companies that also pay taxes. And the other big outflow is interest, which I call a banker's tax. It's kind of arbitrary. It floats around arbitrarily. And, you know, who benefits from that? And if you look at where most people's budgets are, by the time they pay taxes, by the time they pay interest on debt, and when they extend that out to all the things they buy, what they really are left with is about 20 or 25 cents, about a quarter, of every dollar they earn is actually their own. That's why we don't have any freedom. When you talk about energy dependence on systems that are perpetuate a dependence, such as the oil and gas industry, and now they want to use biofuels, but it's the same distribution system. It'll be through refineries, through the oil companies distribution system of gas stations and petrol pumps. It'll be the same model, and the model's a failure. I mean, it is a failure on every level, and we have opportunities to go beyond biodiesels, to go back to truly renewables that make us energy independent, both as individuals, as communities, as sovereign governments around the world. And as important as food was in the last century for government sovereignty, energy is in the 21st century. These two together offer the greatest potentials. These are the highest inflating areas of the average person's budget right now is food and energy, both of which can be resolved with an aggressive international and national campaign for true energy independence by every country on this planet, and a breaking of the stranglehold of the multinational oil and gas cartels.
Yes, now it is a huge debate worldwide talking about the global warming swindle, they call it now, and the inconvenient untruth of Al Gore, and that actually this is all a means to have a world tax, and that actually is another step towards global domination or global manipulation, and that of course there is global warming. Of course we have different weathers, and indeed we see the ice is melting, but there's also an hidden agenda to use this for another excuse to have more control over the masses, to have a world tax system, to, what is your goal on this? I know there's a global warming, but the way they present it is as if we can fix it, because we have
it's not repairable.
We are way behind in trying to fix this, and even if we could, we could do it the moment when Tesla was talking about it in the 1800s. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's way beyond, and most of it is natural, quite frankly. If you look at NASA's reports on solar activity from the sun and the warming of other planets within this system besides our own, it becomes pretty clear that the planets are generally warming. That's related to the sun's activity. Certainly man is augmenting the problem at a time when nature is already peaking. You know, we're sort of throwing more rocks on top of the pile. But, you know, being able to reverse this is not going to happen in the short run. If all the Western countries shut down their industrial production over a 10-year period, the Asian and the emerging economies are moving so much more into the atmosphere, you'll never catch up. And I think that's something folks are not really focused on. They say, well, we need to send our, you know, make an example in the West, and then the others will follow. I don't believe that, and anybody who believes that is naive. Countries work in their own self-interest. Energy is fundamental. The only way that we're going to change energy consumption patterns is to create new, innovative forms of energy production that truly give people independence. and the motivation to make the change. And it is not going to help in the short run or the long run. The only things that we need to be fully cognizant of, and I think people are finally getting to the point of recognizing, the weather and climate is changing, period. Quit fighting over the cause, and let's recognize we better be doing something about redefining agricultural belts, redefining how we produce energy and food, because the biggest risks to stability right now are food and energy instabilities, and we can solve these problems. I mean, a lot of the food shortages around the world have to do with energy because they can't store food properly, there is no refrigeration, transportation is costly. All of these things work against it, as well as where you can grow food is limited by factors that if you had reduced costs in energy, if you could get energy reduced, you could actually grow in commercial greenhouses huge amounts of produce, as you do in the Netherlands and in many other parts of the world where this technology of growing has been developed to a fine science. And when you can input energy using sources like geothermal, solar, wind, even not even getting into the more exotics, there is huge potential in being able to diversify food production and solve energy issues at the same time.
Indeed, I totally agree with you. For those who want to call in this show, take a pen and paper or listen carefully, you can call in live. In the United States will be the number, telephone number is 877-876-5227. I will repeat the number if you want to call in live. Call the number 877-876-5227. If you live in Canada, you can call this number, 888, or another 8, sorry, 4 times 8, and then 159756. I will repeat, 8888, 4 times 8, and then 159756. If you want to have a direct line from outside America, let's say you call from the Netherlands, you have to call 001 to go to America, and then 530-876-322. I will repeat, if you want to call outside the United States, for the Netherlands you have to call 001, and then the direct line is in America, 530-876-3222. Okay, what is your latest developments in doing, you know, I know that you write articles, I know that you publicize, and that you're, how's with your DVD, how's going? Can you tell me how is the latest developments on your webpage?
Yeah, actually we're doing a couple of things. We have some major new things coming up on the website, layinstitute.org. They'll be up in a couple of weeks from a closed conference on mind control that we held in Dallas. We have several presenters, six presenters, that will have their information up as well as the audio track. And this will all be free at the Lay Institute site. And so that, watch for that over the next couple of weeks. We've been a little bit behind on getting it up. It's a little more complicated in coding than we anticipated. The other thing that we are doing is we're developing some more video material. We're working on one for privacy-related issues. We do have one on climate change. It's Earth Changes. A DVD has been already put together on this, covering some of the themes, but in a lot more depth, and looking into what exactly is the cause and underlying causes, and where these things really overlap in terms of where we're headed as a culture and society. So we've dealt with that. We're starting a new radio program that actually we're shifting from a daily, 5 day a week program, to a Sunday, program, and that'll start airing from 1 to 3 p.m. Central Time at gcnlive.com, and that starts, tomorrow, Sunday. It'll be a Sunday program, every week, and we'll deal with technology issues primarily, although we get into a lot of the political issues as well because they just can't help, but overlap in this.
And what are the times?
We're on from 1 to 3 Central Time, and that is, or it would be 2 to 4 Eastern, and that is every Sunday in the PM.
Okay, so people can listen to you live and also could phone in as well.
Absolutely.
Another thing, I can remember that you told me that... everything what you do is on a non-profit basis, and that you actually, if people want to put material what you do on video Google, you even don't care about it because it's the message that people should have access to. Is that correct?
Everything on the layinstitute.org site is available to the public. Anything that we've published on the EarthPulse site, which is a commercial site, EarthPulse is, the other is a nonprofit, but we have no objection to any of the printed materials being circulated, put out there. Anything we post on the website, we consider available to the public, as long as you cite the site, because we do need support to keep doing this work. But we want the information out there. It's important. It's imperative. Where people can really help is there's such a huge movement on the BBS through bulletin boards and through all the different mechanisms that are used on the internet, and we encourage people to take the articles, get them out there to people that'll make a difference, and together maybe we can make a difference.
Yes, and you have the same attitude as Alex Jones. He says, I don't care if you put it on video Google. I don't care if you make copies of my DVDs. It's the message that people should have access to, because if you are doing this, we're helping each other, because we are all in need of this information.
Absolutely. There's so much going on, and it's so rapidly. In fact, a lot of folks help us by clipping articles when they're in their research libraries and they run across obscure papers. Send them to us. Our addresses are on the website. It's easy to get hold of us. That material then we'll use and we'll get it out to the public. So, a lot of individuals do this for us, and as a consequence, it keeps a constant flow. It's almost like there's the fifth front. There's a whole other group of people out there doing work. All of us are working together informally, and yet we're intimately connected, what I call the organic internet. It's the human race. It's what unifies all of us across this planet. And there are a lot of things that divide us as well, but there are some fundamental things that we need to maintain in place so that we can continue to have the kind of vigorous debate on all issues that free peoples have. And I think that's what's missing in this is the, we always see the polarization. It's either you or us. It's either them or us. It's always an either-or scenario. And I think there's more than that. I think there's some fundamental issues that I find in this world today that actually bring people together. I was in a meeting here in Anchorage. It was a private meeting of activists, and the activists represented the Democrats, the Republicans, the Greens. It represented libertarians. It represented Alaska Independence Party players and true independents. All of us sitting around a table talking about government reforms and the things that would enhance our ability to vigorously debate one another. And we did this in a private residence, having a discussion in a way that, I look around the table and I know all these guys. We've worked together. We've been on the opposite side of many issues. Yet we can still, as human beings, sit down together and map out strategies to help make sure that we can keep having that debate. And that's the important part of this. It doesn't have to be so partisan. It doesn't have to be so divisive. When we have these opportunities to set something in order so that we can remain free, engage in those vigorous debates that make human beings so unique, no matter where we live, but we need to take anger a little bit out of this and put back in it the idea that we're all shooting for the common good. We just have a different viewpoint. Let's be tolerant of one another's viewpoints, but more importantly, let's press forward to build a better world, not for any of us living today, but let's think about the people that are going to be born 50 years from now that we have no animosities against. Let's develop a world that can bring them into a place that's closer to what maybe we enjoyed as young people, that has greatly changed and dramatically changing as the years progress.
I think the key word is, of course, that we're all in the same boat, and if there's a hole in the boat and the water's coming in and the boat is sinking and we're all in the same boat, we have to realize that we have to work together.
Absolutely.
John, there's something else.
So there's a lot of things that do get in the way of cooperation. I understand that, and I think all of us are realistic enough to see it. It's how we move through it, and I think a big part of it really has to start with each individual, and then it has to start with us reflecting on our own local, state, and national governments and recognizing whether or not they reflect our true values. if we haven't got that in order, we have no business projecting our ideas internationally. I think we need to take care of sort of reforming our own sort of domestic views of ourselves so that we might have something to offer the rest of the world, not through coercion, but by example of something that actually works. That's the way this model in the United States originally developed. Was the idea of our founding fathers was we were going to create such an outstanding example to the rest of the world that people would want this form of government. And instead, we've watched over 200 years the erosion of that ideal to one of imposition, one that so closely resembles a totalitarian regime of forcing things down people's throats. How far has that gone from the original mission of Jefferson and Adams and the founding fathers? A long, long way. We need to get back to those fundamental ideas that true sovereignty begins with individual freedom and projects out from there.
Everything what you can think of what we call economics, is based upon that people are depending on a system and that you are hooked and that you are have to be hooked on the system because that will, create jobs. Now, that is, of course, the dogma that will, I call it kind of religion almost, that and worship, that it's all based upon it's better for you to have scarcity because then we have the control over the, over everything that goes on, and then we can, from it, we can create jobs. Now, that is, of course, the old way of thinking. We need to actually totally rethink about what we consider economics. I think that whole concept of economics should be held upside down because it's all about control and artificial scarcities.
Yeah, you know, much of it is. I mean, I consider the oil and gas peak oil debate right now is nonsense. If you look at a good overview of what's going on technologically, you realize that there is a lot of undiscovered petroleum resources and all mineral resources. I mean, we're like a little ant on the beach picking up a grain of sand when you consider the resources of this planet. The problem is we don't manage them very well. There's plenty of resources to create not a society or a culture based on scarcity and poverty, but based on just the opposite. The problem has been the distribution models. And not saying capitalism is wrong. I believe capitalism is a great model, but it shouldn't be predatory. It shouldn't be to the expense of higher values. It ought to complement higher values. It ought to be an expression of creativity, not an expression of domination and market control. And it's a balancing of that, what I call a more cooperative form of capitalism, one that says that you have to engage in capitalism on the platform of principles that are basic to all human beings. And I think we can do this. We don't need to see a slave class emerge out of capitalism any more than we needed to see a slave class emerge out of communism. The fact is they just take a different form. I mean, I look at it, I don't see much difference in terms of the outcome of people that are suppressed, manipulated, and herded one direction or another. The sad story is we've done it over a course of such a long time. Most of us have sort of not even felt the full impact of the pain. And yet you look at, just looking at our own borders, I look at Canada, the United States, and Mexico. Mexico per capita has an incredible wealth. The problem is it's focused on a few families. And through corrupt elections and corrupt government, they've maintained control of the wealth and impoverished the nation, where 10% of their entire workforce are illegally immigrating to the United States. Why is that? How about it's because corruption in their own country? You know, the thing that the Mexican government needs is a revolution, like what we had in this country. They need a revolution that ensures clean elections and clean voting, which they haven't had there ever in anybody's recollection. You know, what we've done is prop up governments that clearly act in unfair and unreasonable ways. And what we've really propped up is the families that control the resources that our multinationals really want to get a hold of. And when you look at governments around the world and then you look at the underlying economic conditions within their countries, yeah, Mexico's a capitalistic country. Does it reflect any kind of rational approach? I mean, if you drive from San Diego to Tijuana, you go from one of the richest places in the United States to a place that is poorer than any place in the United States, and yet they share the common beaches, the common attributes of the ascetics. So what is the problem? It's corruption at the core. It usually is based on economic greed. It's about Wall Street, not Main Street. It is a taking from the population and a reallocation of resources at the national level. When you consider that what has made these companies powerful is the taking of public resources, oil, gas, minerals, land, surface rights, railroad rights, all of the transportation rights, all of those rights that generate billions and billions for companies that aren't even domiciled in this country, that have a platform that's international. They could care less what they leave behind as long as it's profits for their owners.
Have you seen the documentary called The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, talking about Venezuela and about the coup d'etat with connections and ties with the CIA? And it's a long story, but have you seen the documentary? The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. That's the name of the documentary on Venezuela Chavez. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen it, you know, but here's another, you know, here's a guy with oil being produced at a significant amount, and he's not playing ball with the power players, and he's creating.
Can be, yeah.
and you know, here's the deal: is hey, a little bit of adversarial things within our own hemisphere, maybe that wakes us up a little bit. You know, what's going on in Venezuela? I don't know all the intricacies there, but I know that there is a lot of unhappiness about exploitation, primarily starting back with the Rockefellers, going back into the 1970s and 1960s when they were making huge acquisitions within Latin America, as well as many other U.S. companies and citizens, tying up resources. Eventually, nationalization occurs. In Bolivia, they threw out Western companies, took over. Venezuela, they just did the same thing. Russia just did the same thing. If people haven't been paying attention, the only one left there is Total from France, but they were nationalized as well and given only 25% operating interest in an oil field that extends 340 miles from the boundary of the Soviet Union into the Arctic seas. And, you know, when you look at the Arctic Ocean as an example, the entire Arctic Ocean is an oil basin, and the people arguing and fighting over it are countries like Norway, Denmark, Canada, the United States, and the Soviet Union. But the Soviet Union is laying claim to a 200-mile limit outside of their continental shelf, which will capture most of the last and the largest oil and gas fields in the world in the Arctic Ocean. And that's happening as we speak. In the last couple of days, there have been some major news reports on this.
I have to round it up, but I have to say something very important. If you're going to Google Video, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, this documentary about what really happened in Venezuela, this is a kind of a script which you can actually project on the Americans in the future. So if in the future there will be kind of a uproar, or let's say the people were not going to take it anymore and they're going to have a kind of a civil war-like mentality in America in the future, you have to watch this documentary. The reason for it is that there are certain tricks in the media being used and certain tactics that I believe or feel that they're going to use it on Americans too in the future. So you have to study this. It's extremely important that people go to Google Video and type in "The Revolution Will Not Be Televised." It's extremely important to study that.
All right, excellent. You know, there's so much good information out there, and I encourage people to, you know, circulate it. Get it in front of people that do make policy decisions. Oftentimes, you know, we assume they know everything. They assume they know nothing unless you give it to them in a form that they can utilize. And if we start to do that, not in a hostile way, don't always approach government in a hostile way, approach them from the standpoint like you would a little child. They don't have the knowledge, and see if you can provide it. You'll be amazed at how many will be receptive with that approach. And I have found over the years that there are good people in all governments. We just have to sort them out, find them, and then encourage them and support them in the right ways. And the ones that get in the way of that, we need to point it out and use the vehicles that are open to the public and let the public know where the truth lies and where fallacy exists. And it starts with each of us. We need to exercise within our own spheres of influence, act and do some things that really enhance the way this world operates. All
yes,
those...
thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for being a part of this show on bbsradio.com. My name is John Kulis from the Netherlands, live. I have to cut it off because the time is almost up.
Thanks, John.
Thank you so much, Dr. Nick. Yes, Dr. Nick Baggage, your webpage is earthpulse.com. You have DVDs, you have your author of books. I would say people go to earthpulse.com, and thank you so much for being a part of the show.
Thanks for having me. Take care now.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, I'll see you next week, and I discuss police reporting UFOs with Gary Hasseltine next week on bbsradio.com, Untold Mysteries Out of Quarantine, every Sunday. Okay, bye-bye. It was 14th July 2007 today. Bye-bye.
This